Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel, one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with our arch-nemesis, Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm your co-host, LaToya Ferguson, a.k.a. the Cordelia Chase of the Bufferingverse, a.k.a. Bones, a.k.a. one half of the Gun Squad, a.k.a. Theodore K. Mullins.
And I'm your co-host, Morgan Ludich, a.k.a. the Winifred Burkle of the Bufferingverse, a.k.a. also Bones, a.k.a. the other half of the Gun Squad, and a.k.a. Frank Skabopoulos.
And this week we're watching Angel Season 3, Episode 10, Dad. Dad was written by David H. Goodman and directed by Fred Keller. It aired on the WB on December 10th, 2001.
And this is the one where Angel tries to protect his newborn son from a growing list of enemies and ends up learning he had everything, or rather, everyone he needed all along.
Previously on Angel. Whoops, look at all that we have done to Holtz. Sajan made his deal with Holtz. He's also non-corporeal. Expecting a bad thing to happen right about now. Let's dissect this baby. It's a human baby. There will be no birth. Whoops again. A lot has happened in these past few episodes. The one good thing, steak. The rain. Holtz lets Angel go. He will show no mercy. And we're back.
We are.
It is still raining because we're still on the same night as the last episode, because this is my first note of the episode, which is that this is something the show started doing I guess they did in season one with the faith stuff. But season two, I think really it's noticeable with like a Reprise and Epiphany, where you have, you know, Angel's whole dark night of the soul, and then immediately he's like, I had an epiphany. We gotta go show up and tell everybody I had an epiphany. Oh, Angel. And of course, the Pylea arc, and it's something that, without spoiling, will become, like, I think it's amazingly impressive in season four. And that's just taking these arcs and making them in a place that's such a short span of time that you kind of have to, like, take a beat and be like, oh yeah, this all happened, like, in one night. These past four episodes.
Gosh, time for some TV is movies discourse, right?
Sometimes TV really can be movies. But yeah, also the way Angel does this with storytelling too, eventually, especially, and I think it starts around here, makes the viewing guides, like the crossovers with Buffy. That's why you need those viewing guides, basically, because there'll be long stretches where it's like, just watch like 8 episodes of Angel and then you can watch Buffy again, as opposed to trading off.
Yeah, this opens with like everyone running in from the rain. Cordy is like already like, all right, how do we baby proof this place? Like, we got to cover up the outlets. And it honestly, that's making me think of like a Hyperion hotel with all those like big slippy plastic things on the doorknobs where you have to turn them and none of the drawers will open right anymore. Like, all of that. I get a kick out of that. Gunn will hate it.
They'll all hate it.
They really will.
It won't work for any of them.
Cordy will put them in and then she will regret it for forever, because those things are a pain in the ass.
Well, we know obviously Wes would know how to use them because he's an expert.
Yes, an expert on all things prenatal and postnatal. But Angel is like not into letting anybody else hold this baby. This is like the first time we see it. Like, she tries to take over for a second and he is not having it.
He is not. He is a very protective father. And also, when they arrive at the hotel, they see all the leftover carnage. Because, like, Lila had cleaners come, but they just cleaned up the bodies. There's still a bunch of blood and the cages that poor Fred thinks something skittered out of it. Skittered is, of course, the word, as we know. But nope, it was for baby and mother.
And they are so handily labeled. So,
well, yeah, they were labeled by your favorite character.
Dr. F, I miss you every day, bro.
Ew.
Another group of people added to my list of angels in this episode. Dr. F up there in heaven, along with my tusky boys. But we'll get there.
We'll get there, because I was like, oh no, Morgan's gonna be like unconsolable.
I was devastated.
And then Wesley gets all British and says, not to mention some bastards blown a gaping hole in the lift.
Yes. And Angel's like, oh, that was me. And then Wes immediately rolls back on it. And it's like, well, we never use it, so it's no big deal.
He pulls a manpire, which is like, sorry, my bastard.
Oh, my God. And then this is when Lauren comes in, correct?
Yeah.
And he refers to the baby as a little nipper. And himself as Uncle Lorne. I was like, wow, you are feeling familiar. And I think it's cute.
Well, yeah, he's like house guest now because as he pointed out, they've just had his place destroyed twice. He lives there now. He's not paying rent. You can suck it, all of you. And you know what? I think did this get cut out of the episode? But I was talking about how it kind of seems like they blew up the set of Keratos basically to force Lorne into becoming a full-time player, like as part of the gang now.
I remember you saying it, and I can't remember if it exists in the final version, but if it does not, it's good to restate here because it does seem like it's forcing him to really have to be in Team Angel's orbit in a much more consistent way. Like, now that it's not about going to Lorne for help, it's about having Lorne around and him, you know, always now being involved because he, you know, lives under the same roof.
Because we are TV nerds, we've talked about this before. Like, when you have a standing set like Keratosh, like getting rid of it, like blowing it up, setting it on fire is a big deal. So to do that, it's like, this isn't something where it's just, oh, he's going to do some repairs on it now. Like, they destroyed that set. So basically, they had to have a reason for that, obviously. And they're not getting rid of Lorne. They're, like, bringing him more into the fold. Because as we've pointed out before, too, they've still been calling him the host this season after the Pylea arc, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, I feel like once you go to someone's, like, homeland and have a big adventure with them, that you start calling them by their real name and not, like, a weird descriptive nickname.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I'm excited to see what they do. Again, not to get TV nerd out too hard, but like the idea that like, okay, if we're going to get rid of the Keratos set, like what's going to come? Like, are we going to get I honestly can't remember not having gotten like, you know, further into my rewatch. So I'm excited to see what we do with the space. Either they have a new and exciting location we're going to be spending a lot of time in, or they're just going to have more room to build like temporary sets so they don't have to go on location to shoot stuff. Either way, fun for us.
Yeah, fun for us specifically, because again, we are big old nerds. But yeah, as you noted, Angel won't let anyone hold the baby. He wouldn't even let Cordy put ointment on the baby.
Yes, and when he tries and it doesn't go so well, Cordy makes a snarky remark about how it's because he doesn't have a woman's touch. And I'm like, Cordy, come on. Pretty gender normative of you.
And then she emphasizes that with a gay joke as his fasting speech, which she has made before. Well, before it wasn't even a joke. She just like, that was when she was thanking him for getting her new clothes and saying that he has like a gay man's taste, which was a compliment.
Definitely a compliment, yes. But yeah, they're definitely, this is the beginning of us establishing that they're very much at odds about the realities of raising this child and what it will look like. Because Angel is, like, he is so clearly bonded with this kid right away, which I mean, like, yeah, it's his son. I was really interested. Someone on Twitter added us, asking us if we, what we thought about the fact that the way, like, with Angel's curse, his humanity, his soul wasn't, you know, immediately ripped from him upon having the perfect moment of happiness of seeing his newborn child for the first time. And for me, I was like, oh, it's probably because the woman he has, like, really complicated feelings for killed herself in front of him.
Yeah, it's attached to so much trauma that I think that removes the actual happiness. If it had been, you know, a quote-unquote real birth, perhaps, maybe, it could have triggered it. And they really should have been worried about that, but they had a lot of things on their plate these past few episodes. The circumstances with which this baby was born, they kind of made it so you couldn't, he couldn't even have a moment to have that moment of perfect happiness, you know?
Yeah, there was a lot of balls in the air, so to speak, like with Holtz, with the rain, with the death of Darla, with the like just intense and overwhelming pressure that surrounds this baby's like potential safety. Like as happy as I'm sure he was to see that that little cutie, which what a cute baby.
Very cute.
Good TV baby. I think they solidly earned that he does not experience a moment of true and perfect happiness in that second. But I did want to address that because I thought that was a fun question.
Good question, yes. You know, it's interesting that obviously Angel's attached to this baby, but it's interesting that even like Cordy is one he won't let touch it because you know how close he is to her. You would think she'd be the exception, but there is no exception in this case at all.
No, there isn't. And I totally buy that. Like I think that it's something that's like really well earned with this character, because that's a hard thing to share. Like Angel has always been a person who's not good at like opening up. Like that's clearly his kind of like default reaction. And when you have a child like that, I mean, I assume I have not had a child, that I would assume your like survival, your instincts to make this child safe and survive, like must go into overdrive. And he must just not want to give the responsibility or delegate any piece of it away, especially given how much danger the kid immediately is in. But it definitely is unreasonable.
I mean, yeah, it's like his emotions are heightened or something. Ridiculous.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But yeah, then we have another patented Angel reveal where Gunn and Fred are talking about this baby dissecting blade. And Fred's like, think he could throw it? And he's like, I guess why? And it's because there's a demon who has come to kill them. This gag does not get old for me, honestly, these reveals at all.
No, and they are so good. It's such good, like, Fred Gunn stuff. They're so good and cute at it because their dynamic is just so, like, light and airy. Like, it really is just, like, lovely and quirky and fast and poppy, and that they can kind of just, like, I think it's because I'm always lulled into the security of their conversation. So when they pivot into the joke of like, ah, we're in danger, I'm always like, oh my gosh, but I was just, you know, entranced by how cute you guys are. So I think, yeah, I will never not fall for it.
It works 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm. They're too cute.
But yeah, but this is a new demon, not one of Morgan's boys. So let us confirm that, you know, demons and other people are just, they're still after the baby because of this prophecy, man. But Angel's more concerned with the baby who needs a fresh diaper. So again, whoops.
Daddy Angel. That takes us into our next scene, right? In Wes's office, which is a Wes and Angel scene. Wes gives Angel some shit about having sex on his desk and now having a baby on his desk.
And seeing as though you once nearly had sex on my desk, I shouldn't be surprised that now there's a baby on it.
Hey. First of all, that wasn't me. That was some guy who switched bodies with me. And second of all, can we just keep the, you know, SCX talk away from the baby?
I was very happy to hear a Carpe Noctem reference, an episode that is near and dear to my heart as it is my first one with you. So I was stoked that they were talking about it. I wrote in my notes, baby's first app. But I also do love that Angel covers the baby's ears and is like, can you cut it out on the SEX talk? And I'm like, honey, he's not picking that up.
You don't know what a baby will learn, Morgan.
Fair enough.
And old man Angel rears his beautiful head as he literally calls the diapers newfangled.
Newfangled. He's used to the ones with the pins. And I'm like, how? How are you used to the ones with the pins?
And then I decided in my mind it was because of his little sister, who he was very close to.
I'm even like wondering if they had safety pins back then. But I also do really deeply want to note that Angel hands Wes a used diaper in this scene. And then Wes goes outside and throws it on the reception desk. And I take back everything that I said about Cordy and her like women's touch thing, because a woman wouldn't do that. And I feel such violence inside of me when I saw that. I was like, this is disgusting. Because, you know, Cordelia or Fred is just going to find that at some point and just be like, ah, God. And I feel for them.
Agreed. And now we've got an old-fashioned Angel Investigations whiteboard situation going. We got two columns, baby. Groups mm-hmm. or individuals who we know pose a threat to the baby. And then we have those who could pose a threat once they get wind of the baby. We got an assortment of people, but I like one thing, which is that we have the Scourge on the list, which are the Nazi demons from season one who Doyle sacrificed himself to stop. It makes sense that they would want to, like, take this baby and kill it because it's definitely an abomination to them.
I love them. I love their whiteboard. I love their rinky-dink list of enemies, and that they're just, you know, this little handful of goofballs trying to tackle the world. I love their family. Yeah. Like, I know, like, the reveal at the end is, like, he has the, like, you know, these are the people who are going to keep the baby safe. Like, he just has to trust in the people around him. But it's just there to begin with. I love them. I was just, it's so cute. They're so charming. God, how do they do it?
Morgan is just beaming, everyone, just so you know.
But the baby is not on board and starts to cry very loudly.
The angel proceeds to say Baba so many times.
Yes, he encourages the baby to take its Baba as if the baby knows what that means. This little guy is hours old. He is. he doesn't know shit. You're not going to have good luck, but he is determined to do it himself and, like, still is, like, blocking anyone out from helping him, which doesn't seem like it's working out too well.
It doesn't. None of this is working out too well for Angel, I have to say. Gunn even offers to help Angel, and Angel's still like, nope. Come on, Angel. Let him in.
This is why you have friends.
And then we go to your favorite character, Holtz and Sajan, and your actual favorite characters, the boys, as I call them.
Yes, this is where I write down my boys drinking big gulps with a heart next to it. And then I also write down excitedly that they have a 2-week contract. And I'm like, great, I'm going to get to see them for so much longer.
Oh, poor Morgan. This is where Morgan cries, obviously.
Obviously. Yet again, I'm crying on this podcast. Holtz poisons my beautiful boys.
I did get teary-eyed at a point in this episode, just so you know. I will let you know when we get there.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
Yeah. So Holtz is to Sajan, why didn't you tell me Darla was pregnant? He's like, it didn't seem important. Come on. But Holtz actually, you know, that hasn't changed his mind. He's like, she got off easy. Okay.
Yikes. But he, like, says that he doesn't want, like, my beautiful muscly boys. He wants, like, real warriors who will really fight. So he insists that he is committed to this cause, even though, like, Sajan's, like, side-eyeing him a lot and being like, you sure you're committed? Because you could have killed him and didn't.
I mean, he's committed to this cause where Sajan even says, we've got prophecies to fulfill. Holt should say, skirt, rewind. We need to talk about that.
Full record scratch. Like, what? Again, I know, as we have discussed, as I have been told repeatedly, vengeance is not a clear-headed state.
In this case, Sajan's clearly saying he's a pawn.
Yeah, and it just seems like if you're at a point where you're, like, zooming out and strategizing once again, maybe take in that information as well and have some thoughts about it, Holtz. This is just some advice from me, Morgan, who you don't know.
But yeah, regarding Morgan's boys, Holt says they're soulless beasts, but only to maim and kill. That's my Holt's British accent.
And I'm like, yeah, maybe if you only had a working relationship with them in these specific confines, like, you saw them at the gym. These boys are sweet. They want to get their pump on.
They're not sweet, Morgan. That is what they are. They're soulless beasts bred only to maim and kill. Sajan said that in their introduction at the gym. You just didn't listen.
Yeah, yeah. I bet I could change him.
Oh, no. But he wants to find info using this box, which is the Mac that Sajan has set up in his lair. Turning on the Mac features the return of Demons, Demons, Demons website.
I love it. Very Broad City.
Cut to Angel Investigations also using their big old box, also using their Mac, but it's a laptop. So the little teddy bear and the diapers on the table. That's cute.
It is, but the baby is still crying.
That's what babies do, I'm aware.
Yeah, I mean, not all the time, though. Like, it is an unnerving sound for a reason. When a baby's crying, you want to try to soothe it. And Angel is remaining unsuccessful. Lauren comes in and explains that he had the Furies put a safety spell on the place, so I guess no one can get in or out unless they use the exit in the sewer, which has a password, which is the Pylian word for hedgehog.
Which means something very different in English, and I wish we knew because Fred thought it was hilarious. It had to be dirty.
It had to be dirty, and she's so cute about it. And the two of them had this like little like exchange about it, and they're both just like sharing a private giggle, and it made me so happy. And I like Lauren as a member of the crew. Like, let's start establishing all the dynamics.
Like, this feels very right. But yeah, they're also thinking of like more people and possibly more ninjas. But no, there was just the one ninja, and we saw him, and he did performative knife play. I'm sorry, sword play, and it was hot. And sorry for Lila's fuckboy.
Truly, RIP to a hunk.
Right. There's also three different websites offering money for the baby. And Angel has Fred trace the websites. Like, that's a thing she can do. But later when she's explaining why it's taking so hard, Cordelia can translate what she's saying to Angel, which means she also knows, like, hacking and stuff. Which, what's happening here?
Look, I guess they're taking some, like, classes at the learning annex about computer stuff.
Because I didn't even know what Fred was saying. And I'm good at computers. And Corey's like, this is what it means. I'm like, I still don't understand what you're saying.
I guess maybe we're to believe that she explained it to Cordelia a while ago, so Cordelia is therefore able to translate it.
Had to be like the hacker of the group. She's been the computer girl of the group until now, so.
Yeah, before Fred, before, like Gunn's like the man on the streets, Wes is the man with the books, and Cordy's
going to demons.
Yeah, she's on the demons boards. What is her handle for commenting?
Bloody Becky.
Bloody Becky! finally it all comes full circle.
But yeah, Fred also makes, they say Fred brings up the firebomb exception for the force field. She and Gunn both do that whole thing where they're like the same thing. They're like, why'd you say that? But like, they're right when they do it and just like accept it, everyone.
Look, yeah, sometimes the truth isn't palatable. Does that mean people should lie? I don't think so. So this is also where Cordelia's like, hey, what if we took this newborn baby to a hospital because it needs like immunizations and like tests and things like that? And Angel's like, absolutely not. I'm angry now.
And he tells the team to do better. It's like, oof. And then he makes it clear. I promised his mother no one is going to put their hands on this child. No one. And he has taken it so literally that even his friends can't put their hand on this child.
We are within hours of this kid's birth. It is normal to be defensive, but it is definitely frustrating to watch because it's so hard, you know, like, because we know these people are, like, fully in his corner, fully in this baby's corner, would never do anything wrong, only want to help. So it is hard to watch. Mm-hmm. At least it was for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't note that Lauren, who is here, keeps hearing a hum in the hotel, which... turns out to be Gavin's amazing surveillance. State of the art, you guys. Just state of the art.
Thank God we have those ears. Thank God we have Lauren's perfect pitch.
Right. And Linwood is pissed over at Wolfman Heart because the child wasn't supposed to be born.
And Lila's like, yeah, slight loophole and everything.
Because it was never actually born. They say basically that, you know, maybe he's getting paid too much, the translator, but like they're about to kill that translator, right?
Yeah, poor guy. I hope they have someone else lined up because he did seem knowledgeable. But yeah, I don't think he's long for this world.
I mean, the one he was worried about, like wanting his job, you know, he's there.
Yeah, he accidentally completely suggested a good replacement.
Yeah, Linwood also wants the Nyhazian scroll writers to work on contracts and negotiations. And you know what? Smart. We need to get into the origins of who's writing these scrolls because they're all tricky bitches.
Yeah, I would love to know. That would be very helpful. This is also where Gavin, I think, says he has like a team out searching. And then he looks at Lila and he's like, I'm sure you would have thought of that given time. Because they cannot stop jockeying for position to save their lives. I love my messy competitive bitches.
See, this dynamic rules. When it was just like Lila versus Gavin, it was just like, no, go away, Gavin. But with Linwood there and them like competing right in front of him, it's so good.
It really is. With someone to like preen for and like the immediate like consequences of that dynamic and that fighting being present helps so much. Linwood says he wants to find Holtz and like that's their next big thing to do. So Lila and Gavin kind of have their marching orders, and then Linwood talks to the baby.
Now that's a cute little baby. Yes, you are. And your daddy is a vampire with a soul. And sometimes he reverts to a creature of pure, malevolent evil who could rip your tiny throat out. Yes, he does.
The best!
I would like to speak about this.
This evil baby talk, which I honestly wrote in my notes, hot.
Oh my God, okay, love that for you. Yeah, I love that he is talking to the baby about Angelus. And I just, like, very much shades of the mayor, the idea of softening him in a way that makes him infinitely more upsetting. It's like, don't mistake this man for like just what you see. There is also tenderness to him, but that tenderness is horrifying because he admits freely and as if this is not a problem at all that the senior partners took his children from him when they were like too young for him to get to form a relationship with him. And he's like, yeah, you know, c'est la vie. And that is chilling.
He's like, I like kids. And he talks about that. It's like, oh, okay. And he thinks it's going to be cute to turn up the surveillance so he can hear the baby. And it's just screaming. And they're all like, this is bad. And he's like, turn it down.
Yeah, it's a short-lived interest in this baby.
He acts like it's going to be so cute. It's like, the baby's just screaming. I don't know what you want to hear. It's a baby. It can't talk, Linwood.
Yeah, and it's not in, like, a cooing stage yet, because it is angry.
Baby Angie. You know what's not Angie? Is actually adorable? Is Angel with Teddy. The baby's teddy bear.
Oh, my God. I was unwell. He's, so, like, him with the bear, him with the lullaby, like dad Angel was very much doing it for me. Like kind of like borderline piss baby, like I will not allow anyone to help me or touch my baby and I'm gonna do reckless shit because I feel like it, Angel, who ended up largely being a plan. Mm-hmm. I liked less, but doting kind of hapless dad, like three men and a baby, and but just one vampire and a baby energy is good to me.
It is. And it, besides the lullaby, there's also him and Teddy doing backup on Smokey Robinson for Lorne. Hello.
Oh my God. When Lorne comes in and sings Smokey, I write in my notes, for this reason alone, my father must watch Angel because he is a big Smokey Robinson fan. And like, just truly every word Lorne was saying was things I've basically heard my dad say. And he's like, look, this kid doesn't like Smokey. Like, I thought you said he had a soul. I was many emotions. I was unwell. They're so cute.
Yeah, so Lauren's telling Angel that the baby can feel Angel's anxiety and just, like, look at your kid. Just, like, really look at your kid. So Angel's, you know, looking at his kid. He's doing funny faces. And the final one is his vamp face, which actually works to quiet his baby, which is so sweet. And that's where I teared up.
Of course. Okay, that's a perfect moment to tear up because it is so lovely. I believe I had, like, my face in my hands and was staring at the screen adoringly at that moment. It is so lovely. And I love what Lauren also says. This baby is more than a mission. Like, and I don't think I appreciate that because Angel is someone who's very much like a directive person. And that's not how you learn a child. You don't, like, make it your goal to, like, yeah, learn how to fix your kid's problems and make him stop crying. You instead have to just be and, like, feel what works and what doesn't. And that there's There are no shortcuts there, and there is actually really not a lot of linear movement there. Like, it's all this weird kind of emotional intelligence that I don't think Angel really excels at. And I do love that Lauren tells him his vibes are bad and that he doesn't pass a vibe check, which he could not.
He could not at all. But yeah, that baby loves Vamp Face, and I love that baby.
Yeah, because that baby loves him. And that's just like, it's such a beautiful thing. Like, that he, like, it, this is his son. Like, that it has love, like, this, he, this little boy, has love for Angel and all that he is, just inherently, you know, because he's his. Good to me. Lovely to me. Now I am tearing up.
Good to me, like that moment I reference often, which is when Buffy kisses Angel's bumpy face.
Yes.
Back, so in an emotionless place, we are in Wolfman Hart's files and records room. Angel is looking up Angel's files, and our lady friend who is, you know, heading up files and records is played by Stephanie Courtney, who everyone must know as Flo from the Progressive commercials.
That is where I recognized her from. I knew you would tell me, so I just decided not to look it up so that I could be excited on mic. Wow, okay. Flo herself, files and records, and she is, like, stuck seemingly in, like, a file cabinet labyrinth basement. And
of course she is. This is Wolfram and Hart. Of course, like, of course she is. Like, duh. But also, I have to pay respect to Stephanie Courtney because she has a prolific acting career. Like, mm-hmm. she was on Mad Men.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been recurring on the Goldbergs for years now. Like, she still acts, but she also, like, makes fucking bank as Flo, so.
Dude, that Flo money must be amazing. If you're listening, you're an advertising executive, and for some reason you really want me to talk about your thing, let me know, because I want to get some of that Flo money.
We all want the Flo money, but I don't even know if it's possible. Like, no one gets that Flo money besides Flo.
That's fair. I love that Lila is given a big old binder. She's like, great, this is all the Angel files. And they're like, no. That is, like, the table of contents to all of the Angel files. Angel has 35 cabinets dedicated.
And counting, because it's always updating.
Mm-hmm. And I love that for him.
He is prolific, baby.
Mm-hmm. So Lila has her work cut out for her.
Okay, so here we go. We got a daytime scene. Cause a lot of this takes place in the daytime, actually, this episode, but this is like out and about in the daytime. Mm-hmm. And Holtz is out and about in the daytime. And has an obituary for a woman named Julia Cooper. Not Julie Cooper, but Julia Cooper. And then he is tailing some other redhead cool girl who smokes.
Dang, this girl's alt.
She's got a leather jacket. And you know what? She knows he's tailing her. And I wrote in my notes, it really is weird that this is in broad daylight, but I guess it makes sense because it makes clear that he's not a vampire, which is an important point.
Her name is Justine. I guess Julia was her twin and was, you know, killed by, you know, two puncture marks in her neck and an extreme loss of blood. So
animal attack.
Do the math. Yes. By an animal attack. And he's like, come with me. I'll help you achieve your ends. And she is reasonably not interested. He like throws her against a car and then against a brick wall. And I'm like, if this man approached me in this way, I would like, I mean, I would break his windpipe, but you know, if I couldn't, because he was a more skilled fighter than me, I would never speak to him ever. And I would like,
I would never have cool girl dialogue with him.
Yes. I don't think I would become his, like, you know, Girl Friday protege. I mean, like, no.
We'll talk more about it in their next scene, but I just want to say, Justine is played by Laurel Holloman, best known for playing Tina on The L Word. And I, you know what? I know this one. I explained it most because I know this one. Tina was with Bette, which is Jennifer Beals' character on The L Word. That's a thing I know.
Hey, look, added to our list of things we know about The L Word. Number one thing, we know we will never be watching it. Number two thing, that.
Kristen's Corner. Kristen's Corner. It's all Riley Dotson. What the fuck? At 40 is hot. Kristen's Corner is the place for very deep
hey, you haven't heard from me in a while, but I had to insert myself here as somebody who has seen the first season of The L Word no less than 2 times and has hosted the first season of an L Word podcast called To Ellen Back, just to represent for all of you. I'm here to say that I am not a fan of Tina Kennard and I am not a fan of Justine. I find no redeeming qualities in either of these people. If you, like me, are somebody who values the wonderful horror that is The L Word, you can just tweet at me and let me know. I will share space with you, fellow L Word people who have seen Tina arrive on your television screens now as Justine, and you're upset all over again. I'm sorry if this is a controversial take. I'm sorry if you don't like me, but this is my corner, so you're just going to have to deal with it. Also, LaToya and Morgan, I really think that you should watch at least a few select episodes of The L Word with me, your friend, Kristen.
Kristen's Corner. Kristen's Corner.
God, we're just going to get like hate mail. Like, why wouldn't you watch The L Word? Because now the bit is too good.
The bit, yeah, we can't turn back on our principles, which is sticking to a bit. Our next scene is in the Hyperion lobby, and Fred is having no luck tracking all of the websites.
And she's very worried because Angel comes downstairs and she's like, oh no, we're not done. But Corey's like, I'll talk to him. And of course, Angel still won't let anyone hold the baby. And
I love that Cordy and Fred are in like sweats, like they're in there like we stayed here overnight, and yeah, like
this is so rest of the episode attire, because again, this all just takes place in like one fell swoop. Cordy says about the baby, look at that brow, he's a miniature you.
And Angel admits to being up all night watching him, but not in like he was crying all night way, just that he was up all night watching his son sleep and like marveling at the miracle of new life. And that's sweet. That is nice. Dad Angel, I love you. So Cordelia's like, hey, what if you kind of unclenched a little bit and like let us hold the baby and things like that? And Angel says, I'm the only family this kid has. I have to be everything to him and everyone to him. Like, there's no room for other people.
Because you're everyone to him.
Yes. But it's really sad. And I know, like, again, I know this is Angel's knee-jerk reaction, but I'm just so bummed because I'm like, come on, these people, like, you know, like, they are your family. Like, this is what families do. You can all take care of this baby together. And, like, you can't do it all yourself. Like, it's just not possible.
I mean, he didn't ask for this. Nobody ever does. But then we have Cordy with the tough love. And the scene that I think about a lot, actually, the scene in the courtyard, it rules.
It's really, really good. And she, like, does not mince words. She's like, you actually can't do it all. You really can't. And she's like, and you know how I know you can't? And she takes his hand and pulls it into the daylight and says, what if you needed to take him to the hospital right now? Like, and he's just like sizzling and crackling in the sun. And she's like, right, you couldn't, because you need other people, because there are so many things this baby's going to need. And you're just not going to be able to fulfill all of those. Like, you know, because of your vampirism, but also because you're just like only one person. It's really good. She makes an excellent point, but Angel doesn't agree.
Yeah, and then Angel gets really gnarly and he keeps his hand out in the sun. He's like, I will get him to the hospital like in the brightest day of the year, even if like he'll get there, even if I don't. It's like, nope, this is not the point we're trying to make, Angel. And then, yeah, he storms off and she's like, damn it.
Yes, it is. He is being an emo little bitch for a beautiful reason, the love of his son. But it's like, oof, he is not even close to learning the lesson everybody is trying to teach him. In fact, he is getting further from it.
He just put his hand in the sun. He is not doing well.
Not great, Bob. And so he goes back inside. He has this little conversation with Lorne, who again references the humming he's been hearing, and asks if he smells bacon. Where he says, did someone fall asleep with the curtains open? Lorne.
Tight no five, one. Tight five.
And no one likes Lorne's tight five, which, come on, guys.
This is why you need Caritas, because Lorne gets to do his tight five every night.
Poor Lorne. I hope that people start laughing at his jokes soon. It's what he deserves.
It is. But yeah, he gives Angel a tip, which is like he's patting him on the breast pocket, which, you know, obviously it's revealed later, but like, no, me knowing at least what's going on, I could be like, this is what he did.
Yeah, it is. I think it's nicely done. It's a good thing. You remember that conversation because of like the way they hang the lampshade on it with like Lauren's joke and everything. Like, that's just like another piece of like, I think, good and clever writing, is when you're going to call back to something, like making it specifically memorable, because I mean, you never know how closely your audience is watching TV. So the idea that like you want to like call attention without calling the specific attention to it, without like really tipping your hand on what exactly Lorne is doing.
This seems like a normal Angel and Lorne scene. Yeah.
It's just great. A+. Like, everyone making this show is like, knows what the fuck they're doing. And it is so apparent. I know. Incredibly scorching hot take from me that all the incredibly talented upper level writers of Angel who've gone on to have big careers know what they're doing. This is why you come to this podcast, folks.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Yeah, Gunn also arrives, and you know what? He took the sewer to get in, the sewer entrance, which means he had to use the password, which means I wanted to see that.
Yeah, come on. What silly word did he say?
Gunn noticed that there are, like, the vampire cults parked outside the hotel, as is a bank biker gang he's, like, familiar with, that they do some kidnapping and extortion. And then also some hooded cloaks, which Wesley notes are the Liliad demons. They have a nice broth with the bones of human children. And they're like, let's see if this child makes the recipe even tastier.
They want a stew going, and that stew is going to be made out of Angel's baby, which is deeply worrying.
And also, these even seem fucking cool, because they also have like magic and can break the fury spell, and like their power is based on the lunar cycle. It's going to be the full moon, so they're going to be super powerful. I'm like, they're awesome.
And when we get to it, their makeup is awesome. And I thought their robes were beautiful. I was, not into their philosophy, not into their habits, not into their diet. But I do have to say, aesthetically, I'm picking up what they're throwing down. But we know that we have until the moon rises for the like spell to hold up, keeping everybody out.
Layla's been reading all night and all day. And she says, what kind of a wussy name is Liam anyway? How dare you, ma'am?
Excuse me, Liam was a himbo prince.
Also, you worked with a dude named Lindsay.
Yeah, come on. I bet she did clown on him a lot for his name.
But we never saw it. So that's the thing. She clowned on him for a lot of things. We just never saw her clown on him for his name. You think Darla loves you? Oh.
Oh my God. Layla, again, just, I hate to love her, but I do. Something about her just really tickles me, and I just know I shouldn't, but I can't resist her.
I hate myself for loving you, as Joan Jett said.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she's trying to remember the pirate's name, and she says Holt's, to which Stephanie Courtney, Files and Records, just rattles off of that Holt information because she's Files and Records. It's her job.
I love this. This is so fun. I love the effect when her, like, when she closes her eyes and, like, there's, like, the card catalog flipping. Like, all of it's great. It's a perfect, super believable, like, great addition to, like, Wolfram and Hart and their mythology. And it's, again, nice to see, as I'd been asking before, who keeps track of all of this shit?
Yes, and I, like, hinted at it, and I was like, ooh, it's going to be very progressive, and that's how I roll.
So Lila's able to, like, understand from what Files and Records tells her, like, so this guy's like looking for vengeance. Great.
Yeah, his family massacred, 9 years trying to find Angelus and Darla, 378 vampires killed in that time, which is actually quite a lot.
Yeah, that's in some impressive numbers.
Yeah, I wonder. Suck it, initiative. Suck it, yeah. Riley Finn.
I'm wondering if, like, how many is Buffy averaging in that kind of time? Like, I wonder if that would be an impressive stat even to her.
Yeah, I actually would like to know that.
I know, day I'll do that math.
I'm like, I'm not going to do this research. Like, that's not my kind of research. But, like, someone can do that.
Please do math for us.
And then we have a scene that takes place in 100% in a Sunnydale cemetery.
Good God.
I've seen the cemetery before. Come on.
And like, with the even, like, the way it's shot, like, it is such a, like, you know, pastiche on Buffy. I write in my notes, Justine doing Slayer shit. And then I write, Holt's peeping, comma, helping.
Why are you like this?
I don't know. But he is, like, she falls and, like, almost eats shit, and he catches her. And she, you know, is unable to dust this vampire and almost dies until Holt saves her.
Your life has been ruined. You can't sleep. Instead, you wander the streets making others pay for what happened to your sister. That's where I can help. I see your talent. And I see your hate. And I know that I can shape and hone you into an instrument of vengeance.
Sounds like fun.
It won't be.
I know I've not been kind to Holtz. I know that maybe I'm not the fairest person to make the judgment. But I don't buy it. I'm confused. Who would agree to such a deal and be enticed by such a man? But I'd love your thoughts.
What are your thoughts on Justine before I get into my whole spiel? Because this is where I get, like, into all my notes and my theories and my research.
I would say, you know, it's two scenes, so it's a little hard to judge. I would like to be charitable and believe that my opinion could change over time as we get, like, as the actress grows into the performance and as there are more scenes, which I assume there will be. But as it stands,
it'd be
right
hilarious
now,
if they just dropped it after this episode. Like, it didn't work out.
Yeah, never mind. I would say it's not doing it for me. Like, it seemed to make a Buffy comparison as strongly as they do, and, like, which they just completely do visually, I think is a complete disservice to the character. Like, it sets her up to be compared to the star of another related show that has had 6 years to establish herself and is a fantastic and well-realized performance and written character, like all of that stuff, to be like kind of Buffy-like, huh? And have her like spout off a couple quips. Like, of course she cannot be Buffy. She just has to look like diet mean redhead Buffy. And I just like,
damn,
that's like that. Like, that is not this, I would say, not this actress's fault, like, in fully a fault of the way she is set up and introduced. And so I'm hoping that I come to like this character more. But as of right now, left very little impression on me.
Okay.
No thanks.
I will use that slam to segue into my stuff, which is that. So one thing is that I vaguely remember at the time, like, there was a fan canon that Justine was possibly like a Slayer potential who like aged out of being activated. That was something people talked about. And I mean, just like write that in your Shanshu prophecies, just something to like mull over, honestly. And this is the first time I thought about it in this case, particularly, like, if it's a warped Slayer watcher dynamic that's happening here, because I thought this scene specifically felt like kind of like a warped Buffy's first slay with Merrick situation too. So yes. I kind of appreciated that, like, thinking through that perspective. I think I appreciated this scene more. But also, like, the big thing with Justine, honestly, like, we have to say it, like, this is such a Kate Lockley insert that it hurts, because this was supposed to be Kate Lockley. And Elizabeth Rom was unavailable because she had just booked Law and Order.
I mean, it probably would have been more of an improvement because she has an established relationship to Angel in the show. But I don't know how much more enjoyment I would have gotten out of it, because Kate is not my gal.
Yes. And she's not my gal as well. And also, I can now segue into my next point. Thank you for that. Thank you for setting me up without even knowing that, which is that, so the issue is basically that Laurel, she has the same, like, she is the same actress type as Elizabeth Rom. Like, she has the same acting tics and I would say issues as her. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, they specifically cast someone as the same type instead of just like going for a different type completely. Like, well, we wanted Elizabeth, so let's just, like, cast an Elizabeth type. So that's what they did here, clearly. Instead of going, like, another direction when they couldn't get her. And I think, like, a Justine or a Kate is, like, there's a difference between these characters and, like, their quips that just don't land to a character like Faith, who at least has, like, a bounce to her with her quips, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And there is a kind of manic energy to Faith's quips. Like, she, like, kind of, I heard this someone say something about Spider-Man once that I really loved, that all of Spider-Man's jokes are like brought of this nervous anxiety that he could die at any second, so he's like making these jokes to make this whole experience like lighter and funner and bouncier for himself, so he's distracting himself from the fact that he is, you know, in peril.
Mm-hmm. And for Faith, that's very apparent, like in Faith, Hope, and Trick, like her introduction, it's very apparent.
Yeah, like she uses humor to like mask her trauma, whereas these gals both seem to, like their humor doesn't, for me, doesn't seem to come from anywhere. It seems to like be a very writerly attempt to make them seem more fun and poppy and enjoyable than they are, and I find that neither actress so far really like delivers them super well. And I don't like to rag on people, but it just, yeah, it's never worked for me. And I think I like what you're saying about the idea of a like warped Slayer watcher dynamic, and I think that's really cool. And I definitely, like I said before, I want Holtz to have someone to talk to who he can talk to about like his emotions, and kind of like, even if he's not talking specifically about his own emotions, he's talking about his feelings on Vengeance and like the hatred he feels for Angel and for, you know, his prey and all of that stuff. Like, that is more what I wanted from the character. But if it's to a character that doesn't really feel very fully realized or very effective or very interesting, then I don't really know if that helps me at all with him.
I feel like this character really, it just tracks so much more if it is Kate, Because, like, while it seems like she possibly made peace with Angel, like, at the end of Epiphany, like, she was still off, like, fresh off a suicide attempt. She had just lost her job. It's not like Angel ever followed up on her and, like, or looked after her. Like, it's easy to see her going down this path because she's not, like, she couldn't, like, just put the genie back in the bottle after knowing about, like, vampires and demons. Like, what else could she do, really?
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the kind of, like, murky stuff this show is good at dealing with, because sometimes you do seem to make your peace with someone, and it doesn't take. And I like the idea of, like, of Angel handling, having to handle that, like, with her and having to deal with some consequences there, like, yet again, and having her to be like, yeah, I changed my fucking mind. Because it turns out all that shit that you did to, like, to me and that you did in general still fucking bothers me.
Yeah, it's like, I didn't have a fucking epiphany. Sorry.
Yeah, and that would be really, really valid. And I think it would have a lot to say about Angel and his, like, quest for redemption and the way that we talked about in these previous episodes that he knows he cannot literally right the wrongs of the past. He cannot fix each and this, as we said, is not my name is Earl. He is not going back and saying sorry to each person and fixing the thing. He is just paying it forward and hoping that eventually when it's time to, like, test the scales and, you know, weigh his heart against the feather or whatever, it's enough and he gets to become a real boy. But I think this would be a really nice, really, like, messy and true, like, feeling thing they could have done, but, you know, actor availability, that's why you have to do this. And yeah, as much as it's like, oh, okay, that definitely makes this make a lot more sense, it has to work even if I don't know about what's going on behind the scenes, and so far it doesn't seem like it is.
Yeah, I tease this, but, like, while, like, Holtz is the one that doesn't work for you, Justine is the one that doesn't work for me at all.
So are you saying you think that I'm going to be a big Justine stan?
God, no. You might finally like Holtz before you like Justine.
We shall see.
Maybe I'd like her more if I watch the L Word, but that's not going to happen. I'm just, like, flipping through the Rolodex of Angel people. I'm like, what about, like, the actress from Eternity? Like, what if she's, like, decided she's going to fucking kill vampires now after that whole, like, pseudo-Angelus experience? Like, that'd be cool.
Filing time, baby. No. Bring her back, baby.
Stop trying to always bring Biling back, Morgan. That's Morgan's whole thing. She loves bringing Biling back.
I love bringing star of Wild Wild West and Crank 2, Biling, back into the conversation.
Is that streaming? Because maybe that should be a movie watch.
I actually do think it is, and we should watch it. Yep.
We should. We're going to be having the time of our lives. I don't know about our Scoobies, but we'll love every second of it.
Oh, iconic. So then we see our next scene is very brief, and it's like the Liliad demons outside, like, chanting. They're beginning their work, and the vampire cultists and the bikers start fighting. So chaos is really breaking out outside Angel Investigations.
Yeah, because they want to know who's going to kill Angel Investigations first, basically. So that's what they're fighting over. Mm-hmm. And then Angel, and you're like, the plan is in motion. Mm-hmm. But obviously, technically, we don't know that. And Morgan especially doesn't know that because she doesn't remember that. So she's very upset.
I was so angry. Angel is like, I don't like this plan. Like, I want to run with the baby. And I am just
running with the baby.
So angry. And, like, Gunn is pissed. And I'm like, he's still salty about season 2, just like me. I write in my notes. Because
I mean, they clearly, like, okay. So, because we've watched this episode and we're now talking about it, we know that they all met in the janitor's closet and they talked about what they were going to do. And, like, it was like, Gunn, you talk about when I fired you.
God, I love
sense memory.
See, for me, I'm like, Gunn will be like, yeah, then I'll talk about how when you fired me and you were such a dick and it fucking sucked and I hated you and I hated you so much. And Angel's like, calm down. And Gunn's like, oh. Yeah, okay, whatever. And then really, like, tapped into his experience.
Fred's like, wait, what happened, Charles? And he's like, oh, I'll tell you later.
So yeah, you're going to get an earful about it because it was not fun. I was late on rent that month and it sucked. Because
that really depresses me.
Yeah, because that was income. income for him. Like, that's what makes me mad. It was income for all of them. And that makes me so mad because he not only like took away their like sense of purpose, but he took away their jobs.
And he wasn't giving them unemployment. You know this.
Yeah. And yeah, were they going to file for unemployment and be like, yeah, you used to get paid out of Angel Investigations, LLC. Yeah.
I mean, actually, sure. He did have that set up, though. So like it probably... Like, David Nabbit David probably said all up. That. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So maybe they got unemployment, but still, not enough. You know how that is.
Yeah. Oh, I do know how that is. Maybe David got them Cobra. I am thinking about them. I'm thinking about David preparing for their severance.
I really miss David.
I miss David so much.
The only good billionaire.
Yeah, the only good billionaire. David is really, I loved the realities of David and like what he would do for the group. Like, that is what they needed. And I miss him. David, come back.
David, come back.
Oh my God. And then Cordelia's like, hey, Angel, did you hear anything I fucking said out in the courtyard? And then Fred, doing her part, says, oh. Angel, don't leave us with her. I of course wrote punctuated with sad faces in my notes. Cause how could you say no to that beautiful little puppy dog eyed girl?
You were going to say Punim. I know it.
She got a cute little Punim.
You like paused and you didn't say it, but I knew you were about to say it.
Cause I was like, do I call, I was going to call her an angel and then I'm don't call her an angel. But then I was like, oh, like a little Punim. Yeah. She's got a cute little Punim and I love her. For those listening, Punim is a Yiddish word for face that I have, made one in very important in my lexicon. Cause it's a cute little word. And I love it. But Angel storms out like a little piss baby and I'm mad.
Yeah. And Wolfman Heart Surveillance, of course, saw all this and heard all this. They're like, he's running away. He's going through the sewers. Send the Alpha team.
Alpha and Linwood, team.
Linwood is like got it in his mind this baby's going to like be the savior who like destroys all of them and like eradicates evil. And he's like, we got to get that fucking baby. We got to dissect it. And Lila is like, dissection is good. When Gavin's like, you know, Gavin says
are
something.
You
Gavin,
the baby is gonna die. And she's like, no, I'm worried that you will get the baby killed before we can dissect it while it still breathes. Linwood looks at them both with hard eyes.
I love the way things evolve from like thinking Gavin just like, come on, Gavin, why are we doing this to Daniel Day Kim, to being like, I love this back and forth every single time. They're both terrible. They should both lose, but also it's great. And again, hate fuck, please.
Please. Like, it just for all of our benefits. But yes, I just love that Linwood is like, oh wow, that was deliciously evil, Lila. Like he's really like keeping a little scoreboard for the two of them, and he liked that from her.
And yeah, Alpha team engaged. They're outside the hotel. I'm like, time for more commandos to die. Like, you guys failed miserably last time. And yeah. The force field is broken. And you know what? It's time to fuck watch.
Flirting, understanding, consent, and kissing. Flirting, understanding, consent, and kissing. Fuck watch.
I thought a lot about this.
Oh, really? You thought a lot about this?
And I think I have to bring out some big guns here. And I have to say that I would like to fuck Daddy Angel.
Oh, yes. I could tell. I could tell.
I was like, maybe I'll pick Files and Records, lady. But I'm like, no, I have to be true to my heart. I have to say it's Dad Angel, like, singing Smokey Robinson, like, playing with the teddy bear, like, being sweet and soft and, like, ultimately, like, kind of letting go of his own like fear and ego and worries about this thing and like learning to be a functional part of this family that like shares the responsibility of raising this kid, because that's what's going to be best for this kid too. It's like, mm-hmm. all of these people have so much to give. Like, Angel will be lucky to have his child learn and love and be accepted by Cordelia, by Gunn, by Fred, by Wes. Like, imagine that kid raised by that group of people. What a lucky baby. What an amazing kid. Like, And you see Angel start to get that. And it's a good look on him. It's a very cute look on him.
It is. I very much agree. And again, season three, Angel is looking good. And honestly, when you said Daddy Angel, I was just like, Day Bow Bow, honestly. That's how sexy it is. But I think my choice is also obvious, which is Linwood. Linwood's fucking hot in this episode. He is so evil, and everything he says, I'm just like, yes, yes, yes. Shut up, Lila and Gavin, get out of here. It's just time for me and Linwood right on that conference table.
Love that for you. Love that for you.
We are just back-to-back fucking Linwood.
First Darla, then Linwood. You're taking my sloppy seconds a couple times.
I had to strike while when is the right time, you know?
Fair.
Yeah. I had to go through my files and records and think, like, will I need to fuck Linwood another time this season? I'm like, I don't know if that's, like, the case, but, like, here, like, just him and talking about his children and, like, whoop, give him away. And, like, turn it up, turn it down. And just, like, his final scene with Angel, I'm just like, yes.
He's doing good.
I would be his trophy wife.
I would watch Real Housewives of Los Angeles, but Angel canonical Los Angeles, where you're Linwood's wife and you're, like, throwing wine in monsters' faces. Like, that's what I want to watch. Yes, please.
Oh, I need a quip. I need a quip for my intro.
I know where all the bodies are buried. My husband put them there.
Watch.
And now it is time, because that barrier is down, baby. We are ready to battle.
Yes.
You're ready to die for Angel, the selfish bastard.
I know. I was like, why are all of you doing this? He's not worth it. Me deciding that I've picked Angel for my fuck watch, but also being like, he's not worth it. Like, I'm mad at him. Wes saying that he's channeling John Wayne in Rio Bravo. I'm like, oh, that's cute. Gunn saying he is channeling Austin Stoker in Assault on Precinct 13. I am screaming. I am high-fiving a million angels. Assault on Precinct 13 fucking rips. Have you seen it, LaToya? You have?
Yes.
Oh, I was so stoked about this pick. I loved that they high-fived. I was so happy. Cordelia
immediately rained on my parade. I missed them so much in that moment. I was like, oh, yeah. Remember how they're best friends?
I need the Charles Gunn and Wesley Wyndham Price's film podcast now. I need it right now. I want to hear what they watch. I want to hear them high-fiving over movie things. And I would like to hear Cordelia Chase, unwilling guest star.
I was saying, like, Cordelia is the producer, but she has to, like, she's like, I've not seen any of these movies. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't care. Your levels are off. this is what I want, because Cordelia's like, throw away your DVD players and get a life. And I'm like, Cordy, movies are fun.
Cinema. So the factions are fighting still. And honestly, this fight choreo was hilarious.
Yeah, it was very goofy. I liked it a lot.
Dave Morgan is just popping out of a sewer on the LA streets. And that's also hilarious.
Look, and when you live in Los Angeles, that's just the kind of thing you see all the time.
Back before the quarantines, I was seeing people pop out of the sewers every day. All day.
All day.
yeah, now Alpha Team is chasing him. And then some factions finally get into the hotel. And then Wes has the flamethrower, because again, really, I mean, I love Vampire Diaries, but they stole so much from Buffy and Angel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and flamethrowers are one of those things. This is where we see the Liliad demons take their hoods off, and they have such, like, spooky sea monster faces.
They're
and
too cool to just be, like, an extra faction. Like, come on.
I loved the way they looked. Like, they're so green and rubbery, and it like feels very like, I'm not an expert in old school Star Trek, but it felt very like old school Star Trek alien to me, which I thought ruled. Yes, more of that, please. I love when they do creature design. I love when there's practical makeup. I'm happy.
But yeah, the remaining faction members who have not been flame thrown, they realize Angel took the child, and you know, so it's a chase, baby.
It is. I also love the second guy that Wes then has to be like, yeah, like the little look Wes gives him before he torches him. Beautiful. I love my boy.
I love them. I love them all. And Angel is apparently talking to the baby, saying, we'll get through this.
It's great. I love that he's like, action set pieces are easy. Being a dad is hard. And I appreciate that. I wrote in my notes at this point when I was mad at Angel, babe, you suck at both. because I was so mad at him for endangering this child. And I was like, that baby does not have a car seat. I was, that really you like were... gave me so much anxiety.
I wish I could like not remember these things, but unfortunately, obviously, you know, I do. So I'm like, what's Morgan gonna think? And of course, I noted the big action set pieces. I'm like, Morgan's gonna love that because it's so good. And it's like, at this point, Buffy's not really doing that. They were doing that kind of in season. They were doing that in season 5. So for season 4 for Angel, that makes a lot of sense. You know, just season 3. I'm sorry, season 3 for Angel. It makes a lot of sense because again, the show. Pretty expensive to make, and it shows, and honestly it really shows, and like every facet, really, from like the monster design to like this set piece.
Having like a car chase is huge. Like, that is such a big thing to do, like, for TV. Like, that's so many moving pieces, like, literally. It is not easy to do that budget wise so it's really impressive that they committed to it. And also, is where I'd like to note very, very Fast and Furious 8, Statham and a baby action sequence, Angel and a baby action sequence. I could not deny that intrigued me in that way.
Of course. So that was, of course, good to you. And I mean, I've talked about it before, just like when I was guesting on this podcast, even before I was a host. And I think it should always be mentioned, like, Angel was very ahead of its time in just terms of its presentation as a television show. It was like the first show that was like in widescreen. It's a beautiful looking show that still looks beautiful today. And you don't have to, like, you don't really have to worry about, you know, crew members showing up because aspect ratio is fucked. Because again, it was filmed in widescreen and presented as such. And I just like, right. I remember watching the show live, and it literally every week looked like you were watching a movie on the WB.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really true. Like, it, which is interesting that they decided to be in widescreen, especially with the first season, which has, I think, like, so much of like an old Hollywood throwback feeling that I think they ultimately kind of stop doing, except for the like cinematicness of it, to not use words well. It is really cool. Like, it does look still so good, which a lot of stuff from this era kind of doesn't, which is a bummer. All our bad guys, like, flee. Like, they're like, we hope we've stalled long enough.
Angel takes them to an abandoned mine, which, again, it's amazing that they like, taking us to an abandoned mine. Like, this is what the chase scene's leading to.
Very impressive. Not easy to, like, big area, lot of extras, lots of expensiveness. Angel finds himself surrounded, and he says, you want the baby, have the baby, and he tosses it to them, and I'm like, oh, okay, thank God that wasn't a real baby. And it is the teddy bear.
Oh, poor Teddy. Teddy goes kaboom.
Teddy didn't deserve that.
Teddy ain't do nothing wrong.
He didn't do a dang thing wrong in his life. Made me very sad. But it blows up, and Angel gets away.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. And it turns out the gang has the baby, and they're at the hospital where they should have been all along. So, good.
Yeah, and we see the first non-Angel person to hold the baby. We see it in Cordy's arms, which is very nice. Feels very right.
And then we got Linwood enhancing over at Wolfram & Hart.
Oh, if you think I didn't write enhance in all caps in my notes. I loved that. So he's like, magnified 100 times.
Again? That's 200 times.
It's a lot of times. And so he sees Lauren handing over the note and calling out the supply closet where there are no cameras. So it becomes clear this whole thing was a plan and a setup. Yay, we love it. I write in my notes, Angel being a dick was an act for the cameras. Thank goodness. Gavin immediately.
Gavin. Trying to clown on Angel's acting chops. I don't believe it. I'm Gavin.
And Lyle's like, sure seemed like you fucking believed it.
Why didn't you tell anyone if you didn't believe it, Gavin?
And then Linwood's like, you know what? This is fine. The herd has been thinned. You know, everything is still working towards our devices.
Yeah, and Lila, you know, has some Holtz information about, like, how all the stuff happened 200 years ago and he's still human, so we've got some time traveling and those damn scrolls. So time to do some more Holtz research. So Lila is above Gavin again, is what's happening here. But then...
Hell yes.
Sirens go off. Those vampire detectors, baby... Yes. Angel's here to see Linwood.
And I am fanning myself. Both of our fuck watches right in the same room. You cut the tension with a knife. Angel walks in, he slices this guy's face, and he's like, my son is a cut in his cheek, so now you do too. And I was like, one, hot, two, yes.
Yes, and
make
hot.
Him pay.
But don't kill him, because we love Linwood. Let him live.
Yes, please. Well, we can't kill Linwood because he's the baby's godfather.
I love it.
I love it. He's like, anything that happens to my son, a scraped knee, a bruise, that happens to you now. So, like, you're going to lay the fuck off of him. Linwood's like, cool, understood. Amazing. Good for Angel. I love it. This scene is great.
Set up that college fund because Angel wants the baby to go to Notre Dame. Fighting Irish, baby.
What a cliche, but I'll allow it.
My next note is all caps. None of them are the mother.
great, because my next note is baby good. So the nurse hands back the baby and is like, he's got all his immunizations and his tests came back fine. And none of the women around are the mother. But they're like, we actually need a name for the baby. And Angel comes in and he says that the baby's name is Connor.
Aww.
I think I teared up at this. I was just like, that's nice. They're all together, like, because finally they're all together and they're not doing like a scheme where they have to pretend that they hate each other or they're not actually on each other's nerves. It's just like a nice warm moment with the whole family. And I was just unwell.
Oh. Mr. Angel, which my mother actually said when I was about to watch this episode without realizing, because she's like, oh, hi, Mr. Angel. She said to like the screen cap.
You tell her it's Geraldo to her. Geraldo Angel, a pet psychiatrist with a small practice in Pacoima who also fights crime.
Fred.
Fred, please come up with all my aliases as well.
Again, if Wesley were around, he could have just said his name is Liam, because his name is Liam. William, even.
Do we think that Angel has any documents? Like, if he...
I mean, he has fake documents because of either, both David and Lila, because of Gavin.
Okay, love it. And then Uncle Gunn comes in with the best stroller that a small amount of money can buy.
Aww. Good. It's good. No fighting. And also, later, like, Angel even compliments Gunn on the stroller, so they're good. No one is mad at anyone.
Yes, and then my last note is safe, comma, home.
And they do the hero walk with baby Connor.
That they all walk towards camera with the stroller, and it's just like, it really is putting down the gauntlet. It's like, this is, it kind of pitches this idea that the show is going to completely change, that it's going to be like, Angel's a dad now, and that's part of things, and they are a family now, and that matters. And that is, I mean, given the way babies are treated on TV, very much as show ruiners. That's a pretty bold statement.
I was going to ask about what you think in terms of jumping the shark. What do you think this is? I mean, I think it could. There's so many ways in which this could be jumping the shark. Mm-hmm. I like Dad Angel. I think this is good, actually.
I think this is good, actually. And I think that a baby's only a show killer if you're bad at making shows. Like, I think that, and obviously there are exceptions and things and stuff like that. But I really think that, like, you get to decide if you want to have a baby on your show. So don't put a baby on your show if it's going to make the show worse. And I recall liking the way that they handle things. And I also think that everyone, like I said, the Angel writers know what they are doing. So as long as you are, like, writing well and treating it seriously, I think you can always make a baby fun on a show. Like, it was always good for, I think, like, Jane the Virgin does it so dang well. Like, that is a show that I definitely don't feel like is harmed by, like, the kids. The kids are great.
I mean, yeah, there are babies all around Jane the Virgin. And you know what? It's good. I think it's time to pick a WB episode that Angel needs to watch.
Hit the theme.
Angel is a vampire. Does he even like TV?
I think he'll like the WB.
They get that hot teen drama to ease the pain and trauma. And here's the episode that he needs to see. Oh,
yeah. I've already chosen a Smallville episode, Ageless, which is the exploding baby episode written by Stephen K. DeKnight. So I'm basically just going to do it again, but with a different show, which they had their own, like, ticking time bomb baby. Which is the Birds of Prey episode, season 1, episode 4, Three Birds and a Baby, that you reference Three Men and a Baby, unrelated,
perfect. Made it
even more perfect. in this episode, Helena rescues an abandoned baby boy that she names Guy and brings him back to raise him. Then he rapidly ages, like this is some WandaVision shit. Mm-hmm. And then once he's an adult, basically, he turns out to be like an assassin who's sent to kill them.
Uh-oh.
And this, you know, this episode's all really all about Helena's mistrust of people, especially men. Mm-hmm. And so she is the one who, like, really, like, gets attached to this child. So it really sucks when he tries to kill her, you know?
Right.
And, I mean, this episode really had, like, a real talent for the personalization of the struggle tees of peoplehoodedness.
Thank you.
The WB apparently was like, let's rapidly age babies and see what kind of killing thing they could do. Do you think there are more exploding babies? Because I feel like there actually are.
I'm sure there are. I cannot think of another exploding baby, but I'm sure they exist. It's clearly just, like, you know, too hot an idea to not have more people rip off.
It's either like an exploding baby or like a ninja baby. Like, it's a rapidly growing baby, and that's never good. I feel like Roswell might have one as well. So if so, I'm going to add that to the list.
I mean, you say rapidly growing baby, and you know I'm thinking about Renesmee and Renesmee only.
I just threw a tissue at my screen because I was so upset.
Fair enough.
It's plug time, I believe. It's about that time. Well, just going to say, our next episode is season 3, episode 11, Birthday, my personal favorite episode of Angel.
Really? Oh, well, I'm so excited.
It's Cordelia's birthday.
Look, in my opinion, that's a good episode premise. As we all, is she like a Jessica Day type about her birthday?
Do you not remember anything about this episode?
No, I don't. I'm so excited.
Wow! this whole episode is like, write this in your Shanshu prophecy, honestly. The entire episode.
I'm so excited. Like, I knew Birthday was a Cordelia episode, so I'm very, very excited.
But yeah, tell them where to find us and everything.
If you would like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @AngelOnTopCast. If you would like to send us an email, which we would love to hear from you, you can write us at AngelOnTopPodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, that is where you can find us, and we can't wait to chat with you. We also have a Patreon, which we are starting to put more content up on there. You should already have out a little episode of a kind of like side podcast called Girls on Film. There is an episode where I chat with Kristen Russo of our feuding podcast, Buffering the Vampire Slayer, about the 2003 classic Down with Love, which is very fun. So check that out.
Yeah, I have a Twitter. Don't follow me on there. Don't talk to me ever. Leave me alone, please.
It's at LaFergs.
Don't tell them.
She's a great follow, but also don't follow her. Listen to her. You can follow me at Lorgan Mudich on whatever social media platform it interests you to do so. And you can also hear both of us on our Vampire Diaries podcast, The Ampire Diaries, if you're interested.
You can follow me on my Twitter, but also just don't talk to me, because every time I tweet something, somehow people don't get I'm doing a bit, or they try to mansplain something to me, or like, with an answer to a question I didn't ask, which was the latest one today. I asked a simple question and people were like, watch this. And I'm like, I don't need to, that's not the question I needed answered.
Yeah, use your common sense internet etiquette and don't be, you know, a silly goose.
Just leave me alone.
Stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.